Hello there, my name is Emer Murphy. I am a barrister at Wilberforce Chambers specialising in property work. I am here to talk today about frustration post Canary Wharf and the European Medicines Agency. Now, frustration, as we all know, is a contractual doctrine. And just as a reminder, it provides a method for bringing a contract to an end where there supervenes an event which so significantly changes the nature of the contractual obligations from what the parties could reasonably have contemplated at the time of its execution, that it would be unjust to hold them to the contract going forward. It brings the contract to an absolute stop. Performance in the new circumstances has to be radically different to that which was contemplated when the contract was entered into. In essence, you have to be able to show it was not this that I promised to do in order to rely on the defence of frustration. Now, the cases have emphasised, in particular, a Court of Appeal case called the Sea Angel, that when answering that question, is this a radically different thing than the contractual obligations I signed up to, you have to adopt a multifactorial approach. And all that means is that there are lots of different factors that have to be taken into account in order to determine whether frustration has been made out. Lots of factors go into the pot in order to answer that question. And those factors are the contract terms, the contractual factual matrix, what the parties knew, expected, assumed, and contemplated when the contract was entered into, in particular insofar as it relates to risk. Then you have to look at the nature of the supervening event and also the party's objective calculations as to the possibilities of future performance in the new circumstances. Now, even though this is a property webinar, it is actually the law of contract that we've got to look to in relation to law on frustration because it's a contractual doctrine. For the Canary Wharf and European Medicines Agency case, I think one may have been justified in assuming that Brexit was one of those once-in-a-generation events of the kind that might enable the right contract to be frustrated. Well, since then we've had the pandemic, and unsurprisingly, that has also given rise to a greater number of frustration arguments, as well as some other non-pandemic, non-Brexit-related supervening events. For the most part, the cases have held the line. This is a very narrow doctrine. It is very difficult to establish. And indeed, none of the cases I'm going to talk about has frustration been established. However, for some of them, summary judgment has been refused and the case has had to go to trial, which I think is quite interesting. And it is interesting to see how the frustration doctrine has been dealt with in these cases post Canary Wharf and the European Medicines Agency. So the first case I'm going to talk about is called Natixis and Famfa Oil. And this was a summary judgment application. The claimants were investment banks, and the defendant was a company with a participating interest in a Nigerian oil field. The defendant entered into various finance documents with the bank in order to assist it in purchasing some additional interests in the oil field. After signing those documents, the defendant discovered that the Nigerian government was looking to obtain so-called back-in rights in the oil field. So as a result, the share purchase didn't proceed. The claim by the investment banks was for payment of various arrangement type fees pursuant to two agreements. The defendant raised various defences, and in relation to some of those defences, the claimant sought summary judgment. Now, one of those defences was frustration. Now, His Honour Judge Pelling refused to strike out the frustration defence. He said it had to go on to trial. And his reasoning was that the multifactorial assessment required by the Sea Angel Authority needed to progress to trial. The judge said it was close to impossible on a summary judgment application to say that frustration was unavailable. You have to determine the party's knowledge, expectations, assumptions, and contemplations, in particular as to risk, and that can only really be done at a trial. The claimants also argued that the decision of the Nigerian government to try and obtain these back-in rights predated the contracts that they were suing under, therefore they couldn't amount to a frustrating event. His Honour Judge Pelling refused to strike out the defence on that basis too. He said the focus is on the party's knowledge at the time of the contract. It is not on the events as they actually were. He also rejected the argument regarding self-induced frustration. Now, I think this is a really interesting case because the refusal to grant summary judgment against the frustration defence is useful for those who are trying to run this defence in negotiations. Later cases have granted summary judgment when frustration is raised, but still this is quite a useful one if you're defending such an application. So the next case I'm going to look at is called Daya and the Partners of Bushlow Street Surgery, a really different factual matrix here. We had various contracts relating to the costs of running a joint GP surgery. One of the GP entities, one of the practices, temporarily lost its registration to provide GP services. And it argued as a result that this frustrated the contracts by which they were liable for running and other costs associated with the surgery. They argued that the obligation to pay for running costs had been turned into an obligation to make payment for nothing once they'd lost their license. Now, both at first instance and on appeal, this argument was rejected for a number of reasons. And Mr. Justice Kavanagh said that one of those reasons was that the contracts concerned expressly contemplated that one of the tenant practices might no longer be able to conduct its practice. And nonetheless, the contracts did not provide for that circumstance to suspend or terminate obligations to make payments in relation to running costs. In essence, the contractual allocation of risk left the risk of not being able to offer services but still having to pay costs on each of the individual GP practices that formed this joint practice. And the judge said that an analogy could be drawn between someone who rents business premises as a mortgage advisor, for example. If they lose their registration as a mortgage advisor, that doesn't frustrate their contract with the landlord to pay rent. The judge recognised that this was really harsh for the appellant GP practice that had lost its licence temporarily, but he made the point that frustration would have been equally harsh for the respondents, who would then have had to pick up the tab for something that wasn't their fault. And this is a recurring theme in frustration, that it's such a blunt instrument. It must be borne in mind what the reversal of the contractual allocation of risk would do for the party resisting frustration. The judge also accepted the argument that the sums due under the contracts were debt. They were debt sums. And the right to those sums was dependent only on the costs having been incurred and the costs having been assessed. The obligation to pay wasn't released because the benefit that the GP practices got from those costs wasn't as valuable as it might have been, or because the income stream which the appellants expected to use to pay for those costs hadn't materialised or was less than expected. Now, this is a relatively orthodox decision, a relatively straightforward application of the frustration principles. And I guess what it does is it underlines how difficult it is to apply the doctrine of frustration to an obligation to pay money. It is rarely, if ever, impossible to pay money. So the next case to look at is a case called Salam Air and LATAM Airlines Group. This is one of a couple of aircraft leases cases where frustration has been run. In this case, these were aircraft leases to an airline operator in Oman. These are what are known as dry aircraft leases. The essence of such leases is that the lessor promises to give quiet possession of the aircraft in return for rent. The lessee takes the commercial risks of operating the aircraft in total. And these were six-year aircraft leases and they had about 3 years left to run. Now, the airline, the tenant or the lessee, claimed that the leases were frustrated as a result of government restrictions, essentially preventing any commercial passenger flights in Oman and the likely suppression of air travel thereafter. The form of the proceedings here is important. This wasn't an application for summary judgment or trial. This was an application by the lessee for an injunction to restrain the lessor from making demands under a letter of credit. And much of the judgment actually concerns the legal test for such an application. Letters of credit are intended to be essentially equivalent to cash. And so the judge decided that the airline lessee had to show a strong case rather than just a merely arguable case in order to get its injunction. And applying that test, the judge held that here there was no strong case that the leases had been frustrated. And he said it's always going to be difficult to establish that dry aircraft leases are frustrated. And that's because all that the lessor had to do under those contracts was to give quiet enjoyment of the aircraft. And all the lessee had to do was to pay rent. And the airline, in order to try and get around this, had to rely on the frustration of purpose doctrine, which is based on a very old case now, Crail and Henry from 1903. That case concerned a contract to hire a flat in the daytime for the 2 days of the king's coronation procession. And those contracts were held to be frustrated when that procession was postponed. Mr. Justice Foxton said, "The frustration of purpose doctrine has seldom been applied since it first emerged." And I think that's very accurate. And he said that here, there was nothing in the terms of these aircraft leases to show that the use of the aircraft by the lessees was a shared purpose of the parties. In fact, the numerous provisions in these dry aircraft leases established the opposite was the case. In particular, the obligation to pay rent was drafted on what's called a hell or high water basis. The lessee had to pay rent, and that was an absolute and unconditional obligation, irrespective of any contingency whatsoever. Those were the words used. So the judge said the contractual allocation of risks here was such that the inability to operate the airline during the pandemic, that was a risk placed on the lessee airline. What is interesting, though, is that the judge said that if the American cyanamide test had to be applied, which is there a serious question to be tried, he was satisfied that that test would have been passed here. He would have been satisfied that the effect of the government regulations were sufficient to frustrate an aircraft lease with just 3 years left to run. The airline here failed because of the high hurdle to be cleared in obtaining injunctions in relation to letters of credit. But consistently with Nataxis, the argument would have crossed the serious issue to be tried threshold. And that's similar to the test applied in summary judgment applications. Is there a serious question to be tried? So I suppose the message from these two cases is that landlords and people claiming under property contracts more generally should beware. It is not always going to be possible to dismiss frustration arguments at a summary judgment application. The next case to look at is the next in time, and that's the Bank of New York Mellon International and Cine UK. Now, this is a well-known case now where the court granted summary judgment for rent arrears against three large commercial tenants whose businesses had to close for periods during the pandemic. Now, the real battleground in these cases concerned the rent cessor and the insurance clauses. But frustration was also considered because it had also been raised by some of the tenants. Now, it's quite interesting because of the procedural history of this. By the time of the summary judgment hearing, none of the tenants were actually arguing that their leases had been frustrated in their entirety. But nonetheless, because it had been raised, the master thought he should deal with it. And he wanted to make clear that the frustration argument would not succeed here. He said the enforced closure of premises due to the pandemic was the kind of supervening event which could give rise to a frustration of commercial leases. And that was particularly so where the user clauses only permitted uses that have become impossible, for example, operating as a shop or operating as a cinema. But he said, nonetheless, it is still rare or very rare for frustration to bring a lease to an end. He said you have to look at the original term of the lease, the likely period of disruption, and the likely remaining term. And he drew an analogy with Panalpina, which was the only House of Lords case to consider frustration of leases. In Panalpina, there was a 15-year lease, 1.6 years of closure, there or thereabouts, and then 3 years left to run. And the House of Lords said no frustration. And the Master said that he didn't really see any distinction between the sort of periods of time that were an issue in Panalpina and the periods of time that he was looking at here. These were leases for 15 or 20 years. The reasonably expected period of closure was no more than about a year and a half. And each lease still had a significant period of time to run. Now, on that last point, one of the leases actually only had 1 year left to run. But the Master said that's still a significant period of time. And it's still such that frustration was not possible. The Master also added an interesting point that I've not seen in any of the other cases. He said that these leases, which he was concerned with, were business leases. They were protected by Part 2 of the Landlord and Tenant Act 1954. And the rights given to the tenant under that legislation are valuable. The tenant would lose those rights if the lease was frustrated. And he said the consequence of this in terms of the frustration analysis was that the degree of disruption that you need to show in order to frustrate the lease is even higher than if it's a lease that's not protected by the 54 Act. It's a really interesting decision. I think it's interesting as well, because contrary to the cases we were discussing earlier, this is a case where summary judgment was granted against a defence argument. It doesn't appear that the cases I've referred to earlier were actually referred to the Master. And he said, well, in Panalpina, it was a summary judgment application too. So he was happy on that basis that he could dismiss any frustration arguments. But I actually think that the thing that probably made it the easiest here was the fact that, as I said earlier, by the time of the summary judgment hearing, none of the tenants was actually pressing for full frustration. So I think the Master was covering all bases by covering it rather than dealing with it in substance. What he did have to deal with in substance, though, was an argument by Sports Direct that its lease had been temporarily frustrated. He gave this a relatively short shrift. He said, there's no such thing as temporary frustration. Frustration is absolute. It brings a contract to a dead end. And that is why the test for frustration is so exacting. He similarly rejected an argument that said that there was a temporary supervening illegality argument, simply because it was never illegal for the tenants to pay rent. The next case to look at post Canary Wharf and European Medicines Agency, which considers frustration, is a case called Wilmington Trust SP Services and SpiceJet. Now, this was another summary judgment application in relation to some dry aircraft leases. In this case, there were 10-year terms. Although COVID was a factor in the background, the tenants actually argued frustration in relation to two aircraft leases where the aircraft had been indefinitely grounded due to safety concerns. The tenant said, well, look, there's a commercial purpose or common purpose between the parties here, which is the provision of aircraft for commercial use. That common purpose was frustrated, therefore the aircraft leases are frustrated. The lessor said, there's no common purpose here beyond the hire of aircraft in return for rent. Now, interestingly, and contrary to Salamare, the judge in this case was willing, on this summary judgment application, to assume the common purpose that the tenant put forward. And I think the reason why, in contrast to the Salamare case, the judge here was willing to do that, is because the terms of the lease were such that the tenant was only authorised to sublet the aircraft to other commercial carriers, other operators. So there were some bits of the contract that supported the tenant's argument that there was this common purpose behind the aircraft leases, i.e. the provision of aircraft for commercial use. The judge was also willing to assume, in the tenant's favour, that the hail or high water provision didn't prevent a frustration argument being run. So that's the clause that says no matter what happens, the tenant is liable to pay the rent under this aircraft lease. And the judge held that generally the risk of aircraft being grounded due to a prohibition on use or due to a defect in airworthiness, those were risks that had been foreseen by the parties and allocated to the tenant, to the lessee under the aircraft leases. But she recognized that the grounding here was of a somewhat different nature. The grounding here was because of defective design in the aircraft themselves, and she thought that that could make a difference. Ultimately, however, she decided that the leases had not yet been frustrated. She said the extent of the disruption to date was insufficient to amount to frustration. It was only about 10% of the term. She seemed to leave the door open for the lessees, the tenants, to come back if the ban on operating these aircraft continued for, say, 3 years. But she said at the date of the hearing, there was insufficient disruption to amount to frustration, and it wasn't open to her to anticipate the future. I think this was really an interesting decision, firstly, because of the judge's willingness to adopt the common purpose that the tenant identified. But secondly, earlier cases emphasised that you basically have to work on the basis of the assumed period of disruption. What is the assumed period of disruption going to be? Is that sufficient to frustrate the lease? You don't just have to look back, you should look forward as well. And it's not clear why the judge wasn't brought to the authorities that make that point, or why evidence wasn't put in as to the assumed period of disruption going forward. Maybe it just wasn't available. But it is interesting that the judge essentially left the door open for the tenant to come back and re-argue frustration in a couple of years' time. And the final case I'd like to look at, the last case which considers frustration post Canary Wharf and the European Medicines Agency, is a case called Aris Helicopter Leasing Limited and El Italiana SRL. Now, this is actually a really recent case. I've not been able to get the judgment yet, but there is a detailed summary of it online. This was yet another summary judgment application against a lessee, this time under a helicopter lease for unpaid rent. Now, the helicopter had been arrested by the Italian authorities for non-payment of import tax, and the lessee argued that as a result, the helicopter lease had been frustrated. Now, this had a 6-year term. Now, the court seemed to proceed on the assumption that what the Italian authorities did was wrong. So they'd seized the helicopter wrongly. And they said, even on that assumption, there's no frustration here. And they granted summary judgment against it. The terms of the contract placed the risk of seizure by the authorities on the lessee. There was this hell or high water provision in relation to rent. There was also, importantly, express provisions placing the tax liability on the lessee. So the judge decided this couldn't be a frustrating event. The risk of it was expressly allocated in the contract. And the judge decided that that conclusion was also consistent with this self-induced frustration doctrine, which means a party cannot rely on its own act of default to invoke the doctrine of frustration, here the own act of default being the non-payment of the import tax. So I think that's, again, a relatively orthodox decision. I think what it emphasises is what is a common theme through all of these cases, that if there is an express contractual allocation of risk in relation to the supervening event, it is going to be almost impossible to establish frustration. And I think all of these cases really show that frustration remains a really narrow doctrine. But for those who are faced with a frustration argument on the other side, beware. There are cases which indicate you will not always be able to get summary judgment against that defence. It might have to go to trial. Thank you very much.